Blog Talk Radio.
And good afternoon, Brendan Cunningham here on Real Estate is Cool, as far as I know. Saying hello to my friends in Western New York, the Buffalo area, 716 land, Southern Ontario, and all points north, south, east, and west, all over the internet. We're going to talk about some cool things in real estate, some things that are not so cool, some challenges that we are incurring right now. Challenges is one of those euphemistic words that we use now to describe problems. here's an example. Gasoline prices are up. Everyone's talking about gasoline prices go up. You know, I think that's interesting about gasoline prices. Interest rates are up too, by the way, in case you haven't noticed. And prices on real estate are up too, by the way, in case you haven't noticed. But when we get to gasoline prices, there's a strange phenomenon that occurs. How many times, I want you to think about this for a second. Here's a pop question for you. How many times have you heard somebody say, well, gasoline is very high right now. I'm going to wait for the prices to come down. I'm going to wait a week before I buy my gas. Has anyone ever heard that? No, that's not a thing. What I find interesting about the whole phenomenon of a gas pricing, and you know, we can chalk it up to Biden economics right now or whatever, but whatever the year, it seems that in the summertime, gasoline prices go up, just as everyone's planning to take their family road trip to, you know, an hour away to 10 hours away. In most cases, they want to drive. Prices go up. Oddly enough, prices always come down every year right before an election, and especially in a presidential election year. And right around September, October, November, you start to see prices down because they know, the government knows. And this is not a political rant, but you, come on, just accept the reality. They know that the American public's memory is short. They have the memory of a gnat, right? Yeah, and they don't remember that, you know, they've been getting skinned alive for the last 4 years, whatever. But yeah, no one talks about gasoline prices, even though they complain. What they're going to do, if the prices went up, they'll fill that frigging tank up, and they'll grumble about the price, and then they'll drive away. And they'll say, you know what I paid for gas this morning? You know what I paid for gas last week? Some people may try to outfox the system, and they may try to drive down to what we call the reservations that surround most of Buffalo. And you can probably save yourself 50 cents a gallon doing that. The problem is if you live 30 miles away, you're going to burn at least a gallon or two because it's a round trip to get there. So any of the savings that you would have, you're going to burn up on just making the trip. I don't want to quote Donald Trump because we have so many people that are not Donald Trump fans. Even if you are, one thing we can all agree on, I don't think he was wrong when he said the whole system's rigged. The whole system's rigged, especially when it comes to gasoline prices. But as I started out, everyone complains about the gasoline prices. No one can do a lot about it, but they still buy gas because they got to go someplace. That doesn't happen with real estate. Because it happens in real estate, you'll hear people say this all the time. It makes as little sense as the gasoline guys. And they'll say, well, you know, interest rates are up, prices are up. I'm going to wait for them to go down. Well, you can wait a long time for that because you know what? That ain't going to happen. Or if you get really lucky and we have an absolute catastrophic economy and the price of real estate goes down, because that's what would be required, almost like a Great Depression kind of bad thing happened. Nobody wants that. But at the bare minimum, if you could get prices to come down, and there'll be little blips on the radar screen somewhere out in cyberland, prices might have receded a little bit. But generally speaking, if you look at the trend over the last 100 years, the trend has always been upward. Now, there may be a little blip down, then it goes back up, blip down. But if you look at the trend, it usually goes up on like a 45-degree angle from the base camp of A up to the opposite extreme on the graph. Almost always. If you outfox the market and wait for that 1 week or two when the prices come down, or a month or two where you just caught it right, it's possible. You could do that. You'd have to have an atomic crystal ball to do that. However, if you could do that, well, you still have to have another crystal ball because now you got to track the interest rates. You're not going to find the rates going down and the prices going down at the same time. If you do, it's a catastrophic event that would cause that. And nobody wants that. So I find it interesting. They'll complain about the gas, but they'll continue to get gas. They'll complain about the prices of real estate and the interest rate, but they will sometimes say, well, I'm going to wait. All those people that will wait, I'm going to warn you now, the parade is going to pass you by. Because as the prices creep up, they will creep up to a point where you're out of the game. You can't do it unless you change your guidelines and your parameters. In Realtor Magazine this month, is it the national one or the, let's see. Yeah, this is the National Realtor Magazine. They talked about exactly what I'm talking about right now and what I talked about last week. And I talked about, you know, how bad can it be? Is it as bad as it has ever been? Actually, no, it's not. However, there is one piece of the puzzle that is getting close to being as bad as it can be. What was the worst year for affordability in real estate? It was 1981. When did I get in the real estate business? 1980. So I was like 6 months in the business by the time the worst came into being. But here's what the and 1981 least affordable market in America. 51% of your money, 51.6% to be exact, went toward your housing. Okay. Now we're in around 25, 26. Some depending on where it could be as high as just generally speaking, as high as about 29. However, for first-time buyers, it is different. This is a direct quote from Realtor Magazine. And I said, wow, look at that. Yes, it is. Buyers have faced a trifecta. Historically low housing inventory, home prices that have risen for over a decade. Why? Because the interest rates were so low. You had to be goofy not to buy it in the last 10 years or just not available. So buyers have faced the trifecta, historically low inventory, housing inventory, home prices that have been rising for over a decade, and higher interest rates today than they were a year ago. Okay. The share of first-time buyers has dropped to a 41-year low. The divide between black and white homeowners has grown to the widest point in a decade. And the share of single women entering has declined. When my daughter bought her first house 5 years ago, women were the fastest growing group of first-time buyers. In fact, I had this conversation with her yesterday. She is so delighted she bought because if she hadn't, she would be paying literally twice what she's paying for her mortgage payment for rent. Twice. What she's paying, because as we all know, the rents don't seem to go down; they just seem to go up and up and up and up. And depending on where you are, rents are obscenely expensive. Like New York City is just insane; it makes no sense to live in New York City right now, especially if you can cocoon your job. For the life of me, I don't understand why people would stay there and pay $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 for minimally comfortable apartments. I mean, you got to make some serious concessions to live there. And trust me, I'm a New Yorker. I'm from New York City. I love New York City. I don't love the way it's being managed these days. And as far as the housing crunch goes, that has less to do with government intervention than it does to economic necessity. However, the government has screwed things up a little bit more in New York City because of their rent control laws and their rent stabilization laws. Because most people that are not from there don't understand it. If you have rent stabilization imposed on you as a landlord, you can only raise the rents by X percentages. And it ranges a different percentage for 1, 2, and 3 year leases. The ridiculous thing is very few people opt for a third 3 year lease in New York City. Most people opt for 1 year leases because it's a highly mobile society and they just pay the increase every year. When the government says you can only increase it by a certain percentage, whether you wanted to increase it or not, you will increase it. That's just the way it works. And if this has been going on for 50 or 60 years, you can see why the rents are, even with government stabilization and things like that, rent stabilization, it screwed the entire equation up. It's bad. So 41 years ago was the worst affordability. And today, for first-time buyers, we can say the same thing. between the combination of higher interest rates and higher prices. So if you're a first-time buyer, you will definitely feel the squeeze more than you would have in previous years. It's just what it is. So I have one buyer that I'm working with, and he's pretty much priced himself out of the market, unless he can change his guidelines somehow or another, or his wish list, because he's a good guy, but he's got a girlfriend that wants to move in with him, and her wish list is much bigger than his wish list. And what's interesting is she's not even going to be on the deed, and she's scuttling his deal. So he may want to review that. I'm not going to give you his name. But, yeah, it's, if you're a first-time buyer, it's tough now. So what can you do? Are you out of the market? Are you boxed out? And the answer is no. You can always, always find, I used to call it a seam or a pocket or a cave entrance to get into the market. Oddly enough, when I said 41 years ago, I got in the market, it wasn't affordable. I was a first-time buyer. And it was impossible for me to even consider buying a house. I don't have any money. I mean, and I was paying New York City prices, and the interest rates, when I finally did lock in, as you've probably heard me say, it was 14.5. So when people are crying about 7 or 6.5, I don't want to seem heartless, but you know, I'm thinking, cry me a river. You're not nearly bad off as I was. And I had to borrow money from everybody. And yes, am I suggesting that you do that if you're a first-time buyer? You do what you need to do. Nobody wants to borrow money, but you do what you need to do. I can remember being chastised by someone when I first moved up to East Aurora from New York City back in 85. And I had made a lot of money in real estate down there. And I was only doing it for – I bought a house and I got in the real estate business. And I was in the real estate for about 5 years. And I did real well in those 5 years. I did well enough where I could sell my properties down – almost all of my properties down there, move up here. And I essentially did not work for about 2 years, just shy of 2 years. And I was a gentleman farmer. I had a 30-acre horse farm, and you know, I'd go out and I'd walk on the land. I'd throw some bales of hay up in the loft. And somebody said to me, well, let me get this straight. You came up to a depressed area, because Buffalo was a depressed area in 85. In some respects, it's still a little depressed, but back then it was really depressed. They were just reeling from losing all of the steel mills. I mean, it was bad. But I didn't know it. It's amazing how the good Lord protects you sometimes. I always say he protects idiots and drunks. I must have been both at the time, because people say, let me get this straight. You came up to a depressed economy without a job and no prospects, and you bought a house? And I said, yeah, that's right. And they said, well, you're either an idiot or you've got – they said something that I'm not going to repeat on the airwaves just because I don't like to use the bad words, but essentially it implied that I had – very, very a good supply of testicular circumference. And I said, well, it's interesting that you say that, because I don't see it that way at all. And they said, well, how do you see it? And I said, well, I said, you know what? I'm at the time, what was I, about 35 or 6. I said, I'm a young man. I'm in great shape. I can work if I choose to. I have a college degree. I have money in the bank. I'm healthy and reasonably good looking. If I can't make it work and I'm white. I said that, and it wasn't because of any racist thing. But frankly, it's a little easier if you're white in this country. Now we have a phrase called white privilege. It is easier if you have all those things stacked in your favor. I mean, it shouldn't be, but that's what it is. And I said. And I admitted it. I said, if I can't make it work having all those things in my background, then what the hell good am I? Come on. So when people say, okay, I don't know if I can buy a house. Well, you don't know because you haven't asked the right questions with the right people. You can always, always get into the market if you really want to. Now, you may have to change your guidelines a little bit. And I warn people, I use the word warn. I confer with people and I say, listen, remember, your first time house is not going to be your dream house. It's not going to be your dream house. The average person only stays in a house about, I think in Buffalo, it's about 10 years, and nationally, it's closer to 6 or 7. They move. We have a highly mobile society. And since I bought that house in 85, I have moved. Let's figure this out. I think I'm right at the average. I moved from there to West Falls, to Hamburg, to the city 4 times. So, yeah, I'm well under the 11-year average. And, you know, I'm okay. And, I moved again. So I have 5 moves. I missed one of the moves. So what's the key? If you're trying to get into a market that's really not affordable and there's not a lot of inventory, see, that's the key. There's not a lot of inventory. That, I think, almost trumps the fact that the interest rates are higher than they were a year ago. They're still lower than they were in all of the years on the average But here's the inside scoop. Are you listening? Get closer to the radio. No, I can't see you. Okay, this is radio. That's why I can't see you. You want to work with a real estate agent. That's door number one, absolutely positively. If you're trying to do this on your own, skip it. Just hang up the phone and don't listen to or the computer or whatever. Don't listen anymore. Stop. Can't do it. Got to get yourself aligned with a good real estate agent. And this is where your real estate agent should really be directing you. First of all, he should get you in line with every first-time buyer program that's out there. There's all kinds of grants and stuff that you can pick up. He should line you up with those things, direct you accordingly. And then when it comes time for you to enter the market, here's your choice cherry-picking plot. You want to look at houses that are not red-hot first day on the market. You will not be able to compete with those unless you're going to pay over the asking price. I mean, that's pretty much the reality. Or unless the place is a dump and it's not going to fly off the shelf. And you probably shouldn't be looking at that either. No, you really want to look at things that have been on the market for about 30 days. What has happened? Well, something's happened. In fact, one of the things I'm going to be teaching next week at a session with the Buffalo Niagara Association of Realtors is a course called Selling Real Estate in Volatile Times. I think this could probably constitute volatile times. And one of the tools that I use is something called a saleability rating checklist. It gives you the pros and cons of what will make a house sell. What's interesting about this form that I use, it's a checklist. There's 19 items on there. If a house doesn't sell, it will automatically appear, if it was listed by a real estate broker, if the broker didn't sell it, it will appear on what they call the expired list. It comes out on a hot sheet in the computer, all of the things that came on the market that day, all the things that had price reductions, all the things that sold, and all the things that didn't sell. Sometimes we call that the bozo list. Typically, if somebody had a house on the market for 6 months and it didn't sell, something really was wrong. And this sheet will tell us what's wrong, okay? Now, if you ask the average homeowner that had his house listed why his house didn't sell, what do you think the number one answer is? Number one answer. The agent was an idiot. Now, or some other word that I don't want to use on the thing, but usually there's an F in there. And it's not fiduciary. Now, if you look at my sheet, there's 19 things on the sheet. Price is not the first thing on the sheet. It's not the second thing on the sheet. It's not the third thing. They only talk about price as number 4 on the list. But there's still other things that made it not sell. One of the things that's on the list, and I think you're going to find this shocking, is the agent had a difficult time showing the property. It just wasn't available to be shown for some strange reason. A lot of times sellers put crazy roadblocks when they're trying to sell a house. And I've often tried to impress on this that selling a house is not the same as living in a house. Why? Because there's inconvenience. You have to be able to have your house shown at a moment's notice. If this is what you, I don't allow my sellers to do this. I said, if I call to make a showing and you say, no, this is not a good time for me because, you know, you have to clear with the seller unless you have a lockbox or something like that. Can we show the house at 10 o'clock tomorrow? And he said, no, I can't because I'm going to be having breakfast tomorrow and my dishes are going to be in the sink and I won't have them washed. Some crazy thing like that. And I said, well, here's the deal. I said, no, we're going to keep the showing and we're going to have people go through the house and this is what's going to happen. They're going to look at your house, and if they like your house, they're probably going to look at 2 or 3 other houses that day. And if they like your house, they're probably going to say, you know what, I really like that first house that we said where the dishes were in the sink. If we don't have the showing, what's going to happen is they're not going to be able to have that conversation, and they're probably going to buy one of those other houses because of scarcity. So you can't allow a seller to shoot his own foot off. And typically what happens is a lot of times when a house has been on the market for 30 years, it's something stupid like that where enough people got into the house to see it. They didn't do an open house. They didn't do this. So there's a number of reasons why a house didn't sell. It's possible. Maybe they did, in fact, overprice the house. That is possible. But if, in fact, they did overprice the house and it didn't sell, what will happen? It will linger. It will hang around the market. Then what will happen next? If there's a good agent on the other side, he'll probably get a price reduction after 2 or 3 weeks. After he gets a price reduction after 2 or 3 weeks, you know, oddly enough, there's more traffic on the house. More people want to see it. And that's your opportunity for you to get in to buy a house if you're a first-time buyer. Look for those houses that have been sort of lingering a little bit, just lingering. And, again, remember, the first house is not going to be the dream house. And the other thing is there's no perfect house. Every house has something that's a little, I don't know, you change something. And the proof of that pudding is ask anyone that's ever built a house, and they'll also, oh, I love the house, and always ask the following question. Say, what would you have done differently now that you know what you'd, and they say, oh, I would do this, this, and this. Would that make it perfect? Nah, probably not, but then I would do this, this, and this. People are always changing. I should have put the door for the bathroom going this way. I should have done this. I should have done that. So that's one of the challenges of the day, and recognize that, yeah, we're kind of in a place right now where the market is not as bad as it was in 1981, but for first-time buyers, it's exactly as bad as it was in 1981, and that makes it a challenge. Not a problem. It's a challenge. If your agent's up for the challenge and you are up for the challenge, you can get a house this year in 23. I'm trying to get as many people as I can to get into a house, and if they want to get together with me, that would be great. But if you get together with somebody, I mean, really, I want to see people realize the American dream, and fewer people will be able to realize the American dream as time goes by. Not going to get easier next year. Not going to get easier the year after that. Just gets getting progressively harder and harder and harder in different ways. But right now, we're around 65, 66% home ownership in the United States and around 35, 36% rental. Some people are just, you know, they're just really locked into the rental thing, and I commiserate with them, and I tell them, listen, the sooner you can figure a way to get out of that, the better, and if you want to meet with me, I'll give you some strategies that can help you, but most people aren't going to do that. They're just going to sit there and be renters and forever. It's not the worst thing that can happen to you, but it's not the best thing either. Again, remember, you probably hear me say this on every show, it is better to rent, it's better to own a hovel than it is to rent a castle. Different, it's a whole different experience when you have a piece of the pie, a piece of the turf, a piece of the action, a piece of the American dream. Remember life, liberty, and property. No, I'm sorry, they changed property to the pursuit of happiness. Okay? Because that's become synonymous with owning things. All the people that own things. Even the communists that they will say, the people that own the means of production are the people in charge. Now, they would want to call it the proletariat, and they're the people that own the means of production. But that's a bit of a stretch there. So that's why you want to own things. And what the other part of the American dream is all the immigrants that want to come, they want to own their own businesses. They want to run their own businesses. They want to go right to the head of the class. That's a good thing. That's a good thing. One of the things that really makes our country as great as it is the immigration. And one of the things I miss about New York City is the sheer unadulterated melting pot. I mean, there's just so many ethnic groups down there, so many languages, and I always found it to be fun and intriguing, and the most fun people to talk with, first generation people, because they came here, they all wanted to work hard, they didn't want to milk the system, as a lot of people think that they do. And granted, there's some people that do, but there's more people living here that go from generation to generation that want to milk the system than people that are coming here fresh. And then they have to conquer the language. I mean, I struggle learning Italian, and I go to Italy, and I only want to speak Italian when I go there, and it's a struggle. And, you know, I said to my wife the other day, who's thinking, you know, maybe we should just go and live there, I said, the problem with going this is we're always going to be odd man out. And we're always going to be, there's a cute little guy that I watch on Facebook, he's a cook, Pasquale. He's delightful, and I love his recipes, but he speaks what we used to call broken English. My mother, who is Italian, she did not speak broken English, but some of the relatives did. And you know what? Even in the family, you know, they kind of make fun of you. So I said, the problem with going to Italy and having it as a second language, we will always be the immigrants that, you know, are sort of the butt end of jokes. And, I mean, I don't particularly want to do that, and I know that you don't particularly want to do that. So we're here, and we're in the United States, and we'll stay in New York for as long as we can. However, I presume we're going to probably become snowbirds at some point and go to the promised land of Florida. That's a whole other story. Some other things I wanted to talk to you about is, you know, with respect to the rental thing, is, you know, landlords, they're in a crunch. A lot of people aren't paying their rents. So let me give you a final word on renting, especially if you're a landlord, because last week we talked about some of the rights that tenants have, and the scales seem to have tipped in the favor of the tenant's favor. All right, final word, because not everyone has the ability or the desire to own housing. We recognize that landlords provide an important public service. But at the same time, they must, and they have to make a profit, and they have to protect their investments. So, of course, they have to do everything they can within the scope of the law. So one of the most important things to remember if you're a landlord and you want to have a successful business, one, you don't have to rent to the first person to come along. You don't have to. Ask every applicant to complete a written application form. Take the time to check those applications and rent only to qualified tenants. What's qualified? Credit. Okay? And you got to treat everybody the same. See, that's the key. Look for people that have sufficient income to pay the rent, people with a record of timely rent payments, and those with a reputation of respecting property and their neighbors. That's a big one for me. I did have a tenant issue last year, 2 years ago, and it wasn't about the rent. It was about they were destroying the property. Not a good thing. You're out. Moving right along. Because you are protected by law, there's never any need to discriminate. Just treat all applicants and tenants alike. And don't base your rental decision-making on that gut feeling or the fact that a particular applicant reminds you of a good tenant you had in the past. Don't do that. It's strictly by their ability to pay and move on from there. Ask every tenant to provide you with a cash security deposit. Sure. Put all your agreements and notices and tenants in writing. That's the best way to minimize disagreements and misunderstandings. Keep up your end of the bargain. This is huge. Keep up your end of the bargain by providing regular and quality maintenance, which will also help preserve the value of your investments. Be a good landlord. When they call to get something fixed, fix it. You know, don't wait a month to fix the damn thing. Treat your tenants fairly with respect, just as you'd want to be treated. I'm not huge on raising my rents if I have a good tenant, because I think I respect that, you know, and sometimes it doesn't make sense. If you have a really good thing there, they're paying their rent early and you're going to boost them up $25. I mean, it almost seems insulting to them, especially if they've been really good. Now, I don't think go 10 years like that, but, you know, but you don't have to whack them every year just because you can. You know, just because you can, good rule of thumb, just because you can doesn't mean you should. So those are some of the challenges that we're facing today in good old real estate in 716 land. We hope you're well. We hope that if you're renting, you have a good landlord, you have a good place to live, and you're safe. If you're looking to buy, recognize the, it's just like I said with the movies the other day. It's Fast and Furious 12. I mean, yeah, Fast and Furious. They keep making those movies. They're all about car crashes. I don't know. But yeah, so there's some challenges out there, but you know, a good real estate agent can help you with the challenges that you are likely to face and get you through to the end. I was able to get a number of people through to the end last year. They are happy. They've become my really good friends because of it, because they're grateful. So that's it. What do you think? Tune in next week. We'll talk about more issues and challenges. And now I'm going to say hello to my good old friend John Coltrane, saying, so long for now.